I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 71 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully all week, is Richard Dunham of the Ghibli Minute and the Akira Minute. Did I get that right?
Hee-haw howdy, Rob. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. All right. I'm glad I got that right. It's important. You know, you don't want to piss off your guest within the first minute. You want to wait a little while.
We had that debate. Yeah. The first episode of Akira Minute, we had that debate. Are we going to say Akira in the English pronunciation, or are we going to say Akira like in the Japanese? So we landed on Akira.
What does it mean actually in Japanese?
Akira is it's a name. Right, so it's a proper name.
Akira Kurosawa. Right.
Exactly, like Akira, yeah. So it's usually, the character is usually means like bright, but it can be different, written with a lot of different characters.
Okay, very cool. So Minute 71 begins with Potter still continuing along with his pitch. And ends with Potter trying to reassure George that he knows who he really is. So we ended things on Friday with, George being summoned to Potter's office, which, he wasn't really sure why he's being brought there or whatever. I just still find it very strange that, George just shows up. Throughout the entire movie, he hates Potter.
Yeah, why would he...
Why would he take that call? Why would he take a meeting? Yeah.
Can you step back and kind of paint the context a little bit for me? So what's happening? I know that this is after some accountant visited Potter and said, "I'm going to be, someday I'm going to ask George Bailey for a job." But
that's right.
Was there some other event in George's life, or is this like...
Well, not necessarily in George's life. Not really in George's life, but we saw that George last week was dealing with Martini's home. Martini's were moving into their new home. And then we had the cut to Potter's office, with his young accountant who doesn't look young.
We've established
that Potter realizes that George is not as dumb as he might think he is, as Potter might think he is.
We saw the development of Bailey Park, right? We saw it with our own eyes, and now we see, and then we saw this accountant say, "Hey, here's the plans for Bailey Park, and it's really something that you should be worried about."
That's right.
To Mr. Potter. Yeah. Okay.
That's right. And so Potter was getting concerned, and then Potter, tries this idea, which we will talk about for maybe half of this week, of trying to basically, I guess, pull George over to the dark side, for lack of a better phrase. that's more or less what it seems like, And so he started on Friday buttering George up and trying to explain to him that I like where your mind goes, but you're doing the wrong thing. You should be here.
Smartest one in the crowd, mind you. Yeah,
that's right. Exactly.
One of my favorite lines.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, Potter knows his psychology. There's no question about it. He knows how to What's the phrase? How to make friends and influence people? So I think Potter just likes the idea of how to influence people, not necessarily make friends. You know, he doesn't care about George. He cares about being the sole provider and the only person in all of what he hopes will become Pottersville. You know, that anyone who needs him needs will run to him, that there's no one else who's going to be able to save them. And he sees George as a threat, which is so ironic because
Well,
George
that's
doesn't
funny
look at
that you
himself as
say
a
that
threat.
because when you say how to win friends and influence people, that I just looked up that's a you know the book by Dale Carnegie actually was published in 1936, which is about when this scene takes place.
Correct. We're not really sure exactly what year this scene takes place. It takes any. I assumed that it's somewhere between 1933 and 1935. You know, it
Yeah,
could be
so I
36.
had
It is possible.
it's somewhere in this speech. Mr. Potter says that George is a young man of 27 or 28, and in one of the timelines that I found
Well,
for
George
the
was born in
events of
1907.
1907, right? So this would be 1934 or 1935.
Exactly, something like that.
Yeah,
Again,
exactly.
that's it's a guessing game. You know, that's one of the reasons why I love doing this. It's the idea of trying to give explanations for things that people just take for granted when you watch a movie like this. You know, I want there to be facts. Let's try to, you know, establish what year this is and stuff like that. And so, you know, like we knew that the run on the bank. Well, let's put it this way. If you go back a little bit, so 1932 was when Harry came back and basically told George, "You're stuck here."
Okay.
So George meets Mary in the summer of 1932. You know, that's when she's home from school. And then at that point,
Okay.
they start courting. So it's a question of, you know, how long do they court for before they get married? And then, you know, they have the run on the bank on the day of their wedding. And then afterwards, you know, they're together for however long. I mean, we'll deal with it later this week, specifically,
Yeah.
you know, about
The progress of their relationship
the
or their
progress of the
marriage, let's say,
relationship
yeah.
and also the idea that there is apparently no birth control. In whatever year this is taking place, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, it's a guessing game. So basically
We'll talk about it.
my
Yeah.
assumption is it's around 1934, 1935. Again, when Potter says, you know, a young man of 27, 28, he isn't, you know, he doesn't know that for a fact. He would, because if he knew a fact, he would have said a young man of 27. So he's using a guessing game, but the
Yeah.
fact that George doesn't correct him, like he corrected him
Exactly.
about how much money he was making a week. So the assumption is that he's right. It's either 27 or 28. You know, who knows? Maybe this was George's birthday. You know, anything's possible.
You almost think that Potter has like, you know, a catalog of like the birth certificates for everybody in the town. So the more information, the more he can use it to manipulate people or something like
That's
that.
right. That's right.
But
He has he.
he didn't have that file open on his desk yet. I guess
Well, he didn't need to.
he
He
have time to
memorized
get the
it.
secretary there.
You know, he's got it all memorized. You know, he's the type of guy who would have, you know, an Excel sheet or a database on his computer, you know, with all of
Especially
this
with his
information.
nemesis, right? We'd
That's right.
have like every information about his chief enemy. Yeah.
That's right. You know, someone who's going to one day take over. You know, and get that fine young man, fine young accountant to leave Potter and go work for George. You know, he's going to be asking George Bailey for a job. I don't think George Bailey has money to pay anyone else because it is a family-run business where there's four family members that are working in the building and loan, and that's it.
Yeah, so it's the Uncle Billy, of course, and then
You have Cousin
who's the
Tilly.
woman is Cousin Tilly,
Yeah. And then you have
right?
Cousin Eustace.
And Cousin Eustace, okay.
Right. But
And
they
so are
never
they both?
establish, how either of them are related. They're cousins, but
they're cousins.
Does it mean that
we don't know if they're Billy's kids or?
My assumption is they're not Billy's kids. I'm assuming
the assumption is that he's,
he's maybe
a confirmed bachelor or something.
Yeah, my assumption is that they had like a sister who is the mother of Eustace and Tilly. I mean that's my guess. Or maybe they're even further distant relatives.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe they're Billy's cousins. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Or maybe they're just like, close friends of the family and they just call him cousin. I don't know. But what Potter does here is he's continuing to paint a clear picture. And again, he's spot on about George, about everything. And he continues with this minute by saying, and watch his friends go places because he's trapped. Yes, sir, trapped into frittering his life away, playing nursemaid to a lot of garlic eaters. Do I paint a correct picture or do I exaggerate? So
I love his intonation. Or do I exaggerate? He somehow makes the whisper like the loudest part of his speech, which is amazing.
I'm very surprised that Lionel Barrymore, doesn't get more recognition for the role he plays here. I believe he is one of the best villains in movies. Even though it's questionable. It's questionable if I believe that if he's really, crippled. That's a separate issue. I think he's faking it.
Have you talked about the acting dynasty, the Barrymore acting dynasty?
We've touched upon it, but we haven't gone into much detail about it. But if you would like to, you're more than welcome.
Yeah. So he and his brother John Barrymore. Mm-hmm. Were both sons, their parents were both actors.
Yeah.
Lionel, I believe, actually, he didn't want to go into acting. He went to Paris to study painting, but he wasn't successful as a painter. So he came back and took up the family trade, which was acting.
You think he made the right decision on that one?
I've seen a couple of his brother John Barrymore's leading roles. I think his maybe just it's my what I've run across, but he seems to be a little bit more easy to find his roles. I haven't seen it yet, but he played Captain Ahab in an early version of Moby Dick, which wasn't even called Moby Dick. I think it was called The Whale. But in this version, Captain Ahab was the good guy and he won. He actually defeated the whale. So that's always been on my list to watch. And then John Barrymore, he played Svengali was one that I've recently seen, which was a compelling performance, but it's very... it's very kind of an anti-Semitic stereotype. It's almost like the Alec Guinness in Oliver Twist kind of level of thing. But it's something to see. But then I think John Barrymore's son, right, was also John Barrymore. I forget his middle name. But then Drew Barrymore was then his granddaughter of, so Lionel's grandniece, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And that's pretty much where the family dynasty ends.
Yes, yes. And the reign ended during the writer's strike.
Yeah.
Which basically tried to hire scabs for a talk show. Yeah. We'll see if her career recovers from that.
Right. His son was John Drew Barrymore. What a surprise, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And then, he is the father of Drew Barrymore.
But yeah, you don't, as one of the greatest villains of all time, right, in this movie, this and his portrayal of it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, have you ever heard the word frittering before?
Frittering, yeah, frittering away. You're frittering away your time, frittering away your resources, your it's just
That's right.
wasting stuff on like kind of bit by bit, wasting it on stuff that isn't gonna it's just kind of like a nuance of not thinking about it, like wasting it without realizing that you're wasting it because it's happening like a little bit of a time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I saw a whole bunch of different interpretations of it, which they're basically all synonyms, but it's just really funny. It's either waste, misuse, misspent, spent unwisely, throw away, dissipate, make poor use of, overspend, spend like water, throw around like confetti, be prodigal with, be wastefully extravagant with, run through, get through, lose, blow, splurge, what else? Yeah, and that's it. So it's basically just wasting your time away. So he's saying that George is wasting his life, because he's trapped. He doesn't get to do what he wants to do, and he gets to play nursemaid to a lot of garlic eaters. Have you ever heard that phrase before?
I have not. I don't recall hearing it outside of this movie, but it's very clear that it's a slur, on Italian Americans, especially since we've just seen Martini, right?
That's right.
And
That's
I
right.
actually said there was like I found an article like on the NPR's website about about the use of this phrase and kind of the irony of Frank Capra, he's from Sicily and he's making this quintessential American movie, and then all of the Christmas carols that have become staples because they have been sung by Italian American singers. So it's kind of
Or Jewish
this
singer.
article is,
Yeah,
yes.
got a bunch of those too. But no, what's really funny is when I started doing research for this episode and I came across garlic eaters, so for some reason my first thought went to vampires. So I started doing stuff on vampires and then I realized, wait a second, vampires aren't garlic eaters.
No,
Vampires need to
quite
stay
the
away from
reverse.
garlic. So then I looked up what a garlic eater was, and it was the first time that I realized that it is a slur against Italians. So, but it was a very popular phrase that was used in the first half of the 20th century. So, at the time when this movie came out in 1946, people were familiar with it. I think that was what you would call, an Italian American at the time. Based on the research that I did. Nowadays, if you were to call someone a garlic eater, they would probably have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
It's like,
You'd be like,
yeah,
okay, you're
I
a
like
garlic eater. And you're
delicious
like, okay,
food.
well, I
What's the
do like
problem?
garlic on, in my salad. And I like garlic. Okay, fine. I'm a garlic eater, So, yeah. But he is so sure of himself with the way that he's, I mean, just by saying, do I paint a correct picture or do I exaggerate?
Exaggerate.
That's right. And then George looks at him and goes, "Now, what's your point, Mr. Potter?" He goes, "My point is I want to
Yeah, he
hire
kind of
you."
dodges the question. He's like, are you just brought me here to insult me? Or do you have actually, something to actually kind of that's, worth my time to be here?
That's
Yeah.
right. And he goes, "Hire
It's
me."
it's
And he goes, "Yeah, I want you to manage my affairs, run my properties. George, I'll start you out at $20,000 a year." So George is completely shocked about this. And how much do you think $20,000 from 1934 is worth in
So I looked,
2023?
I checked, I checked
Okay.
the Bureau of Labor Statistics website, which goes by month. So I split the difference between 1934 and 35 and said, okay, let's
Okay.
June 34,
Okay.
$20,000 in June 34. And then November of 2023 was the latest month they had data for.
Okay.
And according to that website, it was 458,285.07.
Wow. Okay. So I mean, I use the on the internet, you can get the inflation calculator. Mm-hmm. So I use that, and my number is $20,000 higher than yours. So, I mean, I got $472,386. Again, it's a crap load of money. It doesn't matter.
It's a lot. Yeah. You'd be very comfortable.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. It'd be nice.
You know, he's basically offering
upper middle class, even in today's America.
That's right. He's offering him $500,000. I mean, that's pretty amazing. You know, and George, you know, at this point drops the cigar on the floor and gets ash all over himself. I mean, he himself, you know, if someone were to say to you, okay, I want you to quit your job and I'm going to give you $500,000 a year to do the same thing, but for me, you'd be like, okay, sure. You know, George,
totally.
That's right. George completely shocked about it. But I mean, I love the physical comedy of the whole thing, of him dropping the cigar, quickly picking it up, and then like brushing all the ash onto the ground.
So his current salary is what he said, $45 a week.
That's right. Yeah.
Which would be what? About 2,300.
That's right. I think it's 2,500 more.
2,340. Yeah.
Yeah. 2,500.
Let's for round figures, right? So that's.
That's a tenth of what he's being given here.
Yeah. It's like a 20th, right? It's almost like 20 times what he's making.
No, right? It's 10 times as much. It's 10 times as much. If we're going from 2,500 to 20,000.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's even a little less than 10% than 10 times, yeah, but still, it's a nice jump. But my assumption is that first of all, the hours will be much different than what he's doing in the building and loan. And what's worse is that he now will have to answer to Mr. Potter. You know, he's not the one making the decisions.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my next question. Is like, okay, when you say manage your affairs, run your properties, does like how much discretion do I get? Right? Just following your orders, or do I get to run things the way I think they should be run?
That's right. If I want to go play pool,
independence.
That's right. If I want to go play pool with Ernie, can I still give him, you know, the loan?
Right. I mean, can I offer, you know, the mortgages that I want to offer and pull people out of, you know, out of poverty the way I want to do things? Or is Potter going to tell him exactly what to do?
I mean, I think Potter's looking for a yes man here. You know, he
wants to neutralize the threat.
That's right.
He doesn't want to actually harness the ideas that George has. He wants to kill them.
That's right. You know, his whole point here is to, you know, have the enemy succumb to him and let him still, you know, be in charge all by himself. So, you know, he and Potter is hoping that George is just as greedy as the next guy, you know, and is going to be willing to take on something like this. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know, I've quoted Gordon Gekko many times, you know, in this season. Mr. Potter believes that greed is good, and therefore, you know, he's hoping to use that in order to, you know, get George to get on the bandwagon, get on the Potter bandwagon. And then George goes $20,000 a year. And, you know, at this point, Potter knows he's got him a little bit hooked. So he goes, yeah, you wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town, buying your wife a lot of fine clothes. A couple of business trips to New York every year.
New York every year.
Maybe once in a while, Europe.
Europe. Yeah, there's a delivery on each of these lines. It's just.
And he goes, yeah, you wouldn't mind that.
Have you talked already about what is on Mr. Potter's desk?
We've talked briefly about it, trying to figure out what it is. I mean, it's very strange to. You know, that skeleton head, what possibly is a keychain? I don't know.
Yeah, I did find like a couple sites that talked about what those things are. I thought at first that skull I thought that might have been like a tea infuser, something. That's what it looked like to me, like something, you know, heavy stylized, but it's something, you know. But I've seen those kind of metal balls, not a skull, but like a metal ball that you actually just put a tea bag in and kind of use it to dip, like seep tea.
Okay.
But that's not, you know, I found a couple, like I said, a couple websites that said this is actually a death's head pocket watch, which I guess were popular for a while at that time. And then that weird thing next to it, like on the tray with the candle, that is an old-fashioned letter sealer.
Okay, that actually makes sense now that
so I can imagine you like using that to melt wax and seal a letter.
Oh, wow.
That way, yeah.
And the thing behind the skull, death head,
that one I don't know.
I believe that's the lighter that he used to light up the cigar.
Oh, okay, to light George's cigar. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm pretty sure it is. But wow, okay, I didn't think about the fact that I definitely didn't know that was a letter opener. Or a letter sealer.
Letter sealer,
excuse me. Yeah. And like I said, I was close by thinking that's a keychain.
Yeah.
Keychain, pocket watch, you know, not much of it.
Now in the and then when you the wider shot, we see, you know, the glasses and the two pencils. I don't know what that thing is. The thing in like on the left side of the papers, maybe that's just a paperweight, but it's like the it looks like a silver egg. That one I don't know. And then there's like a kind of like a trumpet thing looking off to the side. I wasn't able to find out what that is, but my guess is that maybe it's like a magnifying glass, something that he uses to read close and inspect documents maybe. That was my best guess for that one.
Oh, wow. And on the left-hand side, you see he's got like a stamp, you know, like for, I guess.
A stamp or like a blotter or something.
Approved by Potter, you know. Potter approved. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's great. Thank you very much for pointing that stuff out there. So, I mean, once again, it goes back to the fact that Potter knows George. He knows what George likes. And he's trying to find a way to convince George that it's worth it for him to give up everything for these dreams. And I mean, it's ironic because throughout, you know, we're right now 71 minutes into the movie, and throughout the movie, we see that George is constantly saying, "I want out of here. I want out of here. I want out of here." And he's finally given he's given a ticket to do so. And he's not sure what he wants to do.
Yeah, at the cheap price of his own soul.
That's right. And then he starts looking around and he goes, "Would I?" And then, like, it's great. He looks behind him and goes, "You're not talking to somebody else around here, are you?" So, you know, it made me think of Harvey the Rabbit, you know, that Harvey's behind him somewhere in the room. Who knows? And he goes, "You know, this is me. You remember me, George Bailey. Bailey." And he goes, "Yeah, George Bailey. That's the guy I'm talking to right now, George Bailey." But he's still in shock. He's not really, he doesn't 100% realize what's going on here. He doesn't know why Potter is so enthralled by him, which says a lot about George himself. Because George doesn't think, you know, that highly of himself and his abilities. And I think that's because everything that he has always done, he does without any effort. You know, this is all natural to him.
Yeah, he thinks his talents lie in engineering. Right?
That's right.
And I guess...
Even though he still hasn't studied engineering.
Yeah, he has the only clue we have that he has any talent in that area was, it seems like it was his suggestion to put the pool underneath the gymnasium floor.
Correct.
I don't know if he designed it or something, but you know, whoever that school
That was the principal.
Principal, said like, oh, George, good to see you. It was such a great idea to put the pool on here, save us a building, right? So that's the only clue that we have, besides the models that we see later, that he has any talent for engineering.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is the stuff, this bookkeeping and, you know, just the everything running the savings and loan is just
it's something that Peter Bailey alluded to. Really think about. In the scenes that he had with his father has already noticed that George is perfect for this type of work.
Yeah. You have a talent. He says you have a talent for this or something.
That's like that, right. That's right. Because he was working for him for two, three years, or whatever it is. And he already saw how George is doing it so fluidly.
Yeah. That's what I call the Uncle Owen scene. It's like,
give me one more.
George, James Stewart. That's a whole nother year.
That's right.
One more season.
Just one more season. And then you can go waste time with your friends.
Time we'll get the next harvest. They'll have enough money to hire some hands. And you can go away to engineering school next year.
That's right. That's a whole year from now. You can find time to waste time with your friends.
It's funny that you gave me this week because I had I did the best years of our lives minutes. Mm-hmm. I had a similar scene where one of the characters was coming back to his job at the bank.
Okay.
And he got like a surprise promotion.
Yes.
So we had that week as well.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the best years. I think it's a great. I think it's going to come up later this week. Is it later? Or maybe it's next week.
It's either later this week or next week.
I know that, but I'm saying within the context of the movie, I have something that to talk about with. Not any discussions for the segments, that type of thing. So that's pretty much all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute?
No, we covered my notes.
All right, great.
Oh, I did have one other thing. Sure. Sorry.
No, that's
let me go back to my notes here. So I just had a question. I did a little bit research about, I was looking at everything else in the office, and I thought the light switch looked, looks like exactly the light switches we have today. And I was curious, when did we settle on that design for the light switch? And I thought maybe the 30s was, I was expecting maybe a push button or some other style, but the toggle switch that we see here was actually patented in 1917.
Oh, wow.
So we've had the same style of light switch for a long time.
Yeah, seriously. Wow. I never even thought about that. Wow.
Okay. But yeah, no, that's, I think that's my last note.
I'm curious if we look throughout the rest of the movie, if we find those type of switches in other places, or is this something, that only someone with the finance of Potter is able to handle?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So,
I do have a note for another switch later in the week.
Okay. All right. We'll highly anticipate it. Light switch week. Yes. Very good. All right, great. So every Monday we have a segment called Capra Monday, where my guests will give their top five Frank Capra movies. So Richard, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Number five. So I looked at his biography and I found a movie that I didn't realize that he had done that I remember seeing. So my number five is Hemo the Magnificent. So I think late in his career, he did a bunch of kind of educational films for Bell Labs. And this is one of the movies he did that was about the circulatory system, about because hemo is Greek for blood. Mm. And it's very much in the style of the Simpsons love to make fun of these kinds of educational films that are shown in classrooms. And I remember seeing this film in a classroom when I was maybe fifth grade. So,
oh wow,
that's number five. Number four is Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. So it's kind of debating. I think it was kind of a toss up between this and what is it? Meet John Doe.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of similar movies, but this one, you know, but I mean, they both start, it's Gary Cooper. But this one has a great courtroom scene, and I'm a sucker for a courtroom scene. And this is where people realize that, you know, Gary Cooper's character isn't as dumb as he looks. So that's a great scene. So that edged out Meet John Doe. And then number three is It Happened One Night, which one of the early, one of the, I think not the first Oscar winner, but one of the earlier.
No, it was like the seventh or eighth year of the Oscars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
That was 1934. And the Oscars started in 27.
So this, it's Wings, I think, was the first one.
Right? Mm-hmm.
But so in It Happened One Night. In this movie, a rich businessman hires a journalist to go retrieve his daughter, who's kind of run away in the South. And so they have a lot of adventures. He goes, meets up with his daughter, and they have a lot of adventures coming back north, which happens to be the exact same plot of of Gareth Edwards' first movie, Monsters.
Okay.
Of course, in that movie, there's actually, they have to travel through a zone of where there are giant monsters. So that's kind of missing in Capra's version. But when I saw Gareth Edwards' movie, I was like, "What? This is a remake of It Happened One Night."
Oh wow.
yeah.
Is that acknowledged as a remake or not really?
I think it's my headcanon.
Okay.
In my headcanon, it's a remake. I don't think it's like officially, but it's pretty obvious to me. Number two is Lost Horizon, which is an amazing picture. I think people have already talked about it on this, in the, some of the episodes I've already listened to on this, mm-hmm. on this season. I just remember, you know, when that one woman crosses like the threshold when she wants to leave, and she crosses like the borderline and suddenly ages.
Yeah.
It's one of the most memorable scenes that I think about like all the time. And then number one is this picture, because it's one of the most, It's a Wonderful Life, because it's one of the best movies ever made, well worthy of the minute by minute treatment. So I commend you for doing the, taking it up with this podcast.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, I'm not doing it because you like it. I'm doing it because I like it, but it helps that you like it too.
Yeah.
You know, so, all right, great. I did look up in IMDb, and it does not mention It Happened One Night at all in anything dealing with monsters. So, you know, the only reference in Monsters, the only movie that Monsters references is Apocalypse Now. So, yeah. So you see, we can add it in if you want.
Yeah, we could edit that right now. Yeah.
It's very simple to add the information to IMDb. So.
Yeah, but in this one, it's a photojournalist instead of like a newspaper reporter. But
okay. But it's also, it's basically 80 years later.
Basic plot is what it is. Yeah,
exactly. All right, great. So Richard, you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, you can go to my website, dunhamrc.com. It's DUNHAMRC, and so that has links to my two podcasts, Ghibli Minute and Akita Minute. So. Ghibli Minute is a podcast I did with my daughter, going through the Studio Ghibli movies 1 minute at a time. We made it through about 3.5, 4.5 movies before that petered out. And then
aren't there like 40? How many Studio Ghibli movies
are there? Yeah, I don't know what we were thinking when we started that. But we did make it through, let's see, Nausicaa and...
Well, if you use the inflation calculator, so it works the same way.
Exactly. Yeah, we've made it through like 5,000 minutes.
There you go.
Something like that. Yeah, and the Inakita Minute is something I do with a friend of mine who I met through doing Ghibli Minute, but Jack Stovold, who lives in Fukuoka. So yeah, it's kind of the same thing, going through like Japanese animation and going through like all the nuances of the Japanese. But Akita Minute is the R-rated version. This Ghibli Minute is family friendly.
Well, okay, family friendly, but there are some interesting things that are going on
in our podcast.
Exactly.
we keep our
podcast. Ah, you're talking about the podcast. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the movies themselves.
Yeah.
All right, okay, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow. Hot dog.
We'll be waiting for you, baby. Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.